You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.
Hello there, and you're very welcome to Tech Thursday. This is Patrick Sheehan. I'm going to be with you for the next hour or so, looking at all the latest in tech and answering any questions you might have. As always, you can call 069-66200 or 087-166-9800. And you can email myself, patrick102fm@gmail.com. And any questions you might have, I will answer them on the next show. So we're going to be having a look at all the latest in tech and everything like that, as I was saying. But first, I'm going to answer some of your questions. So the first question is from Joan in Newcastle West, and she's asking about pressure cookers. So she said over the Christmas, she was visiting relations and they were talking about their pressure cooker. And in her email, she said she was looking for one herself and what would be the best kind of one to get. And they are becoming increasingly popular now, the new kind of digital pressure cookers. I suppose it all started a couple of years ago with Instant Pot. It's a good few years ago now, but there's lots of different brands doing them now. And so I looked up an article here kind of giving some of the, it was on the Daily Mail, giving some of their tips for some of the best ones that they would recommend. And I suppose it all depends on the size you're looking for as well. You go by litres and what you want to be doing with it. Some of them say if you like to eat rice, some of them have a rice cooking facility and some don't. So if you want that will do that, get one that will do that. There's ones with different kind of things built into them that will do different jobs. So some are much more limited. They're just standard pressure cookers, and other ones have different settings in them and different hardware built into them to be able to cook more than some others. And then, of course, you have the size as well. Say you don't want to get a one that's only a couple of litres if you want to cook a full, say, a leg of lamb or something in it that you want to, you know, some of them can work as slow cookers as well. And some have timers and so there's lots of different settings in them. But let's have a look at the article here. So the number one in their list, the best overall for them, is the Instant Pot Duo 7-in-1 Smart Cooker. So it's 5.7 litres, stainless steel, and the pros and cons. Features 13 pre-programmed settings for a variety of dishes. Cooks up to 70% faster compared to standard cooking. Yeah, well, of course, that's the benefit of them, of course, in the first place, is they have a kind of a valve on top that you can release pressure. So what you close that valve, you put whatever you want into it, a stew or a soup or boiling some meat in a sauce or different things, and you close the valve to keep the pressure in. You turn it on, it builds up the pressure while it heats up the steam builds up the pressure while it's heating up, and then it cooks under the boiling point of water is 100 degrees, and but when it's under pressure it can go up to like 120 or something like that. It was years ago since I read that, but it can cook quicker then because it can get to a higher temperature. So It's something that might take an hour could be done in 20, 25 minutes, something like that. Or it can definitely cut times down. Oh, and it says here up to 70% faster compared to standard cooking. So, and then when it's almost finished cooking, you can flip the valve and let the steam come out, and you have a little a lifter that's usually, it's like a little red switch that lifts up with the pressure to let you know that there's still pressure inside. So when you release the steam, you flick the switch and release the steam, the little red indicator will go down to let you know that the steam, the pressure has gone inside, and then you can twist the lid to release it, and you can remove your cooked food. This one anyway, large 5.7 litre cooking pot, 7-in-1 functionality, does not feature a cooking progress indicator. This is some of the downsides. The inner pot is not hob friendly. Also, you couldn't put it on a hob if you want or something like that. No silicone handles as well. Looking for a pressure cooker, you know, you can rely on with over, say, has over 17,000 good reviews. So that one, it's the best rated pressure cooker with an impressive 13 customizable one touch programs, including meat stew, slow cook, healthier and convenient cooking, as well as auto adjusting heat. All of these features help you cook one pot meals up to 70% quicker. So, the best smart pressure cooker is the Sage BPR 700, and the price of that one, the instant pot is £83. So maybe 90, 92 or 93 euro, something like that, depends on the exchange rate, but it'll give you an idea anyway. So the Sage one is a bit more expensive. It's £145, so it could be 170 euro or something like that. 6 liter stainless steel, but this, it looks, the screen is, looks more fancy. It looks like the whole front of the screen and the front of the thing looks like an old style iPod. Look, there's a small screen and there's some scroll wheels and stuff on the front. So, yeah, 6 liters. It's packed with safety features, including an automatic locking function, features an automatic pressure release. Oh, that's very handy. Yeah, because the one I have been using at home myself has just a little valve that you open. So this is an automatic pressure release and everything, so that's pretty cool. Includes an LCD screen for monitoring, combines a pressure and slow cooker in one device. Yeah, so a lot of them do that as well, even the cheaper ones. The downsides, it has a bulkier design that takes up more counter space. Some buyers say the searing function is slow to preheat. Oh yeah, some of them, if you put cold water into it, it obviously takes longer to boil, and it does take a while for the pressure to build up in them. So if you put warm water, possibly might take less time to heat up, and the pressure might build up a bit quicker before the, what it is say if you set it for 40 minutes to cook something that normally takes an hour and a half or whatever, it'll build up the pressure first, so the 40 minutes doesn't start counting down for maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes until the pressure builds up first, and then it starts counting down the time on the one I've been using anyway. Bringing the best qualities of a slow cooker and a modern pressure cooker together in one device, this extra large kitchen appliance can handle almost any dish you want to cook. Featuring an LCD screen, 8 pressure levels, a 6 liter pan with a non-stick coating, as well as a steaming basket tray, this cooker provides high performance cooking no matter how much time you have. So that's a kind of the most fancy kind of one. Best pressure cooker for a variety of cooking options. The Pressure King, I think it's a Pressure King one that I have. I got it as a gift, actually. But I think it's a Pressure King one that I have. This one's 14-in-1. I think mine is 8-in-1 or something like that, although it looks quite similar to this one. It can cook rice and things like that. I didn't pick it out myself, but you know what? If I had picked one out myself, I would have got pretty much the exact same. So it has been quite good. I know this is, oh no, this is a different one now, because the one I got was a 3 liter. This is a 5.7 liter. So this would be the big brother of the one that I have been using. It's 14-in-1 digital pressure cooker. It's £89, so maybe 95 euro or something like that. Features 14 cooking functions. Cooks meat straight from the freezer. Sturdy with high quality construction. They are heavy, in fairness. They're solid, thick, kind of feels like cast iron, you know, the lid and the body of the thing itself, the inside lining of it. And in the actual container that you can remove that holds the food is light enough. It's pretty good. It feels like a kind of a thin pot or something like that with some coating on it. So no defrost option, and doesn't come with a recipe book. Doesn't have a defrost option, but it can cook meat straight from the freezer. So I don't know, maybe it's just it can't just defrost meat and leave it raw. It can only cook it straight from the freezer, so I presume that's it. And it doesn't come with a recipe book. Yeah, the one I got didn't come with a recipe book either, just instructions. But you have an idea anyway, and you can there's lots of YouTube tutorials and things like that for using using those pressure cookers. Although the settings do specific things as well. So I suppose if it was just a matter of turning it on full, like a microwave, full power for 1 hour or whatever like that, you could do lots of different things. But when it's specific settings, all right, you want to, I just kind of, there wasn't a full recipe book, but there was a minor, I kind of instructions of, to put raw meat, you put this time or whatever, to put cooked meat, put it on this setting for this time. But there wasn't specific instructions. There wasn't a specific cookbook kind of thing. But it did the job. There's also budget stovetop pressure cookers as well. 40 euro, 40 pounds sterling, so maybe 45, 50 euro. But if that's the old-fashioned ones, if you wanted to do it that way. But I suppose the digital ones are very convenient if you're not, and like a cooker is going to use electricity or gas or something anyway. So I would recommend the convenience. It's so handy, you know, just to load it up and turn it on, and it knows the correct time. You can add a bit of time yourself if you want something. Say, my wife was cooking like a leg of lamb, and she wanted to get it pretty tender. So it was the time setting on it. I think there was a time setting on for that or something like that. But it recommended maybe 30 minutes. But we added on an extra 10 minutes, and it was very tender. You know, the meat was nearly falling off of the bone, and the flavor was very nice in it. So, but if you did want the stovetop one, you wanted to put it on your cooker to heat it up there, the Tower One Touch Ultima pressure cooker is that one anyway. So for 40 sterling, 3 liter capacity. So it's the same capacity as the digital one that I have. Budget friendly, lightweight design, ideal for cooking up to 3 or 4 people. Suitable stovetop pressure cooker, smaller capacity than other models, fewer pressure settings. So it has, yeah, there's, it's not very big, but it has enough space for up to 4 people, so that's pretty good. Yeah, it is the one I was using now. When I was doing that leg of lamb, I actually had to cut it into sections. Luckily, I had the cleaver, because I had to cut through bone and stuff, because it wouldn't fit into it with just the 3 liter capacity. So if you are doing stuff like that and you want to kind of leave stuff on the bone, or you're doing something bigger, I would definitely recommend going as big a liter as you can if you're going to be doing bigger things and cooking for the family and things like that. I had a pork leg thing as well, and it was kind of poking out. The lid wouldn't close on it. It was almost there. It definitely, if I had another 0.5 of a liter, it would have fitted. But because of that, I had to cut it in half as well, and I kind of squeezed them in side by side, the kind of two halves of the pork leg, then to kind of get it to cook. So yeah, definitely it's better to go bigger than smaller if you can, and there mightn't be, you know, an extra 20 quid or something like that. So best pressure cooker for a large family meals. So the Ninja Foodie Max 15-in-1 smart lid multi cooker with smart cook system. So this is one of the multi cookers now, so this might do more than just standard pressure cook, and it might do different stuff. This one is all screen. It's only some of them have like a rake of buttons on the front, and this one has just a few buttons along the bottom, but it's all screen looking. So it's all you go into menus and different things like that to pick what you want, rather than just press one for meat, one for soup, one for rice or whatever like that. It's 299 sterling, so maybe 350 euro, something like that. 7.5 liter, so it's a good size. It's a big, one. Stainless steel features an extra large capacity, boasts 15 pre-programmed settings, ideal for large or busy families with up to 6 people. Option to use as a pressure cooker, air fryer, or steamer and crisper. Oh, so it can work as an air fryer as well. I was just thinking of that when I was researching for this, that it would be handy to have one that will work as not just as a pressure cooker, but as an air fryer like that as well, and steamer and crisper. So that's brilliant. No power or sound indicator, but this is some of the downsides. No power or sound indicator, not oven safe. So if you wanted to take the inside part out and put it into the oven or something like that, it wouldn't work that way. Heavier and bulkier design takes up more storage space. But it is this is a kind of an all-rounder. Actually, yeah, because I was thinking I have a kind of the one I got myself, I keep it put away somewhere because I kind of have one of those glass air fryers on the counter and I have limited counter space. So I kind of have to decide the toaster is put away and that is put away. So I take it out when I need it. But I have been using it a good bit, but I've been just putting it away again. Same, I have a bread maker machine as well. So that's put away as well. But it would be, if I had one of those ones, I could, give the air fryer to somebody that I have and put that as the main one where it can do two or three jobs at the same time. So that would be pretty cool. So that's a good idea. If you don't have an air fryer and you don't have a pressure cooker and you were thinking to get both, that might be a good idea as a kind of an all-rounder, or look for another one that has the similar kind of specs. That's a multi-cooker, you know. So that's the Ninja Foodie Max 15-in-1. But it is expensive, so there might be cheaper ones that do a similar job. So that's an idea of how the pressure cookers work and a few different ones that are out there. And there's lots of other brands out there anyway. They're becoming very popular at the moment. They have been for a while. Best of luck with that, Joan. Hope you get the one that suits your budget. So next up, we have another question in from Caroline in Broadford. And Caroline was looking at her son's birthday is coming up and he wants a VR headset. And he was thinking of getting the PlayStation VR, the new one that's coming out, and kind of asking, do I know how much it's going to be and things like that? And is it the best one to get? And I actually followed up with a question to her. Does her son have the PlayStation 5? And she said he does. So it would be handy to have that, all right, because otherwise it will not work without the console. But he was looking at the Oculus Quest 2 and trying to compare, and or should he wait out? Should she wait out to get the VR2? So that's the big question, I suppose, at the moment. The only thing is, it is going to be quite expensive. The rumors going around. Well, at the beginning, the rumors were that it was going to be around €450 or something like that. But now it's looking like €600. Like, is it £540 sterling and €600, something like that? So it's going to be very, very expensive. It's $550, but as far as I have heard, it'll be around €550 to €600, I suppose, would be the best way to say it. But there'll be different bundles. Maybe it was a bundle one or something I was seeing, like with a game with it, something like that. But it is going to be quite expensive, all right. I know there is a lot of high-end tech in it. It'll be more advanced than a lot of the other ones that are on the market already. And, you know, people were comparing it to the other one that's like €1,400, the advanced one. But it, you know, has eyeball tracking, you know, where it gets, depends on what OLEDs. There's two OLED screens for each eye and they're both 4K. And whatever part of the screen you look at, it does foveated rendering, I think it's called, where it makes the screen sharper on depending on what part of the screen you're looking at. So it has a lot of very advanced tech. It has cameras on the outside, so it can work as AR as well. It can kind of map your sitting room or wherever you're using it. It has the benefit of having PlayStation games, so you can play the games that come on PlayStation, and some are the like of Blood and Truth that came with the original one, that was an excellent shooter game, probably the most immersive shooter game ever, you know, but I had its limitations, but one of the best all-rounders for immersive shooting, you know, you're ducking behind tables and all that kind of thing. And so it does have the benefits of having the PlayStation itself behind it, but you do need to have the PlayStation 5. It won't work with the PlayStation 4, it won't work on its own. So there are definite downsides and definite advantages for the likes of the Meta Quest 2 that works on its own as well. It doesn't need a wire to connect to the console, and the PlayStation VR does. So there is definitely pros and cons. So some of the reviews have been coming out, Let's see what this is. One from CNN.com. See what they've been saying about the PSVR 2, and then we'll look at some of the other ones as well. The PlayStation VR 2's improved controls, tracking, and visual fidelity make a strong impression right out of the gate. And Horizon Call of the Mountain is shaping up to be a fun and immersive launch title. But with a high asking price and no backwards compatibility, will Sony's long-anticipated headset be worth it? Here's what I think so far in the rundown. So $550 in America. February 22nd is coming out as well, in case you're wondering. So I don't know if that'll be in time for the birthday or what's the story there, but it's coming out the 22nd of February. The VR2 is looking like a vast improvement over one of our best VR headset picks in the PlayStation VR, offering much better performance and more streamlined setup process. So yeah, what I've heard is, say I have the PlayStation VR1. And it is good, but, you know, the graphics aren't the sharpest in the world. Now, some are better than others. It depends on the game as well. But the screens themselves for the eyes are pretty good. Okay, but there is like a screen door, they call it, effect on it. Especially when it's dark. You can see a layer behind the closer to your eye than what you're looking at. So I don't. That's just the effect they needed to make it work. Then, so it does look like you're looking through a dirty window or like a foggy kind of a slightly foggy window, or the screen door is the best thing. Like a mesh, you're looking through like a net curtain or a very light net curtain or a screen door is the best way. So if you've ever had to look through a screen door at something, that's the effect. It's right in front of you, but then when the colors come on and the games come on, you don't even see it, but it is kind of there on the darker things. And apparently that's gone in the new VR2, as well as all the other stuff they have. And there's vibration motors built into the headset itself. The new controllers have the same kind of settings as the PlayStation 5 and things like that. So I've talked a bit about that before, but it is quite more advanced and well up to date and past some of the current ones that are also on the market. Sense controllers that feel, we'll go back to the article again, more ergonomic than the older Move controllers, while also offering the same advanced detailed haptics that we love in the standard PS5 DualSense controller. But perhaps the biggest upgrade to the PSVR2's internal camera sensors is the internal camera sensors, which should solve many of the setup headaches that we have had with the original model. Whereas the previous PlayStation required you to have a PlayStation camera attached to track your controller movements, not to mention a clunky processor box that powered the whole thing, the new headset promises a seamless plug-and-play experience with a single cable. So there's a lot less setting up with the new one. The PSVR 2 felt comfortable and lightweight as soon as I got it on my head, and I never got the urge to adjust it throughout my roughly 20-minute demo. As I did some quick calibration to get ready for the demo, I was impressed by how quickly and accurately the headset tracked my eye movements, something that made it easy to navigate menus without having to move the joystick around. After a few minutes of setup, it was time to venture into the wilds of Horizon Call of the Mountain, the first-person action game set in the same post-apocalyptic sci-fi universe as Sony's popular Horizon games on PS4 and PS5. As soon as I began my journey as a disgraced soldier being taken to his destination by boat, I was immediately struck by the improved visual fidelity of the PlayStation VR. My crewmates looked as lifelike as detailed as they would on any PS5 game. I couldn't help but swing my head around as I marvelled at the lush greenery all around us and the towering robotic beasts looming from above. The immersive experience is all made possible thanks to the PSVR 2's improved 2000x2040 OLED HDR display, which is a notable step up from the 960x1080 resolution on the original model. So it's much sharper and it's OLED. I don't think the original one was OLED. Once things went awry and it was time to go into survival mode, the headset's new sense controllers proved impressive. Everything from the bump of my boat to the tug of my bow and arrow was met with its own distinct level of feedback, which made it easier to get into the action. Climbing up mountains felt especially tense and thrilling, to the point where my real-life hands started to sweat as I worried about falling off of a steep cliff. Fortunately, the game and controller's hand tracking was accurate enough that I only made a few slips and thankfully didn't fall down in real life. it does seem to be quite immersive. So what's their final takeaway? The VR2 makes a strong first impression, pumping out impressive 4K gameplay within a design that improves on its predecessor in just about every way. Horizon Call of the Mountain is shaping up to be a nice showpiece for the headset, and I'm eager to see how other titles like Resident Evil Village and Amongst Us VR run on it. However, all of that power doesn't come cheap. The PSVR 2 starts at $550. There's also a $600 bundle, so maybe it might be the same here. So that includes Call of the Mountain and requires you to own a 400 to 500 PS5. Console that's still not exactly easy to come by. The headset isn't backwards compatible with PSVR 1 games, though some titles will offer free upgrades to the PSVR version. And while the launch lineup looks somewhat promising, we can't wait to play Resident Evil Village and Gran Turismo 7 in VR. It also consists of lots of games that have been available on other headsets for quite a while, such as Star Wars Tales from the Galaxy's Edge and Beat Saber. Still, the PSVR 2's promising performance and improved design alone have me excited to spend more time with it. So they give it an overall good review, but it's very expensive. So let's see. Right, if you're in the Apple kind of ecosystem, Apple are designing a VR AR headset, but it could be a while down the line. After years of mystery and waiting, the arrival of Apple's mixed reality headset is just around the corner. Maybe. So this is a maybe. So I don't know if you're willing to wait for this, but if you're in the Apple space, you might be interested in waiting and trying this one. The Apple Mixed Reality headset is Apple's take on virtual augmented reality headsets. Apple's version will deliver many of the same functions as the headsets that are on the market now, but will likely house more advanced technology. VR headsets are pretty much the cutting edge of consumer technology right now, and Meta, Google, and other big tech companies have been eyeing the space for years now. It's not a huge surprise that Apple wants to be involved too. So let's see, the headset has been rumored for years, but there is very little in the way of solid evidence that it exists, apart from a few comments by Apple's top executives and a steady stream of rumor. So this is really down the line. It's really... there's nothing in place yet. Apple filed patents to give us a clue into the name of the Apple headset, which will probably include the word reality, the iReality or something like that. Back in August, Bloomberg reported that a shell company linked to law firms Apple had previously used filed trademark applications in multiple countries for names Reality One, Reality Pro, and Reality Processor. A couple of months before that, another shell company filed two patents for Reality OS, which could refer to the software the headset would utilize. It's not unusual for a big tech company such as Apple to use a shell company to maintain secrecy. How much expect to cost? We can expect the headset to cost anywhere between $2,000 and $3,000 due to the M2 chip it will utilize, the high number of cameras and high resolution displays, and this places Apple headset at the higher price point on the market. The Meta's Quest Pro retails at $1,500 and the HTC Vive Focus 3 is $1,300. So, you know, if you look at those, the PlayStation 5 for $600 doesn't seem as bad as it's been said. So, but I suppose you're comparing it to the lower down in the price market ones. Although it does seem to have some of the higher end technology. So, in perspective, maybe compared to those, it doesn't seem as bad. But in something for a gamer to just buy to go with a console, an accessory for a console, it does seem a bit expensive. There's no solid timing there anyway. So, Let's see. This is three of the best VR headsets to buy in 2023. The Valve Index is the flashiest all-in-one VR system. Valve pioneered the field of full zoom reality with the HTC Vive, and the Index is one of the company's follow-up to the grandfather of zoom, of room scale. The Valve Index is a computer-based VR system that comes with everything needed to turn an empty room into a digital paradise. It does require a strong computer with plenty of GPU power, but Valve's next batch of headsets is the best all-in-one VR option in 2023. It comes with two 1440 by 1600 LCD screens, 44Hz refresh rate, and integrated audio options. So how much is that? I'm just checking, because that could be, I don't know if it's one of the more expensive ones. So I just had a look there. So that's €1,500, that one. So it's one of the price range ones. The Meta Quest 2 is one of the best VR headsets of 2023. Even if you don't exactly have the best gaming rig in the world, Meta has you covered for VR headsets in 2023. The Quest 2 is the latest standalone VR headset. It runs completely separate from a computer. In fact, it doesn't even require sensors to be set up in the room. The camera-based tracking system allows players to take VR with them wherever they go, making it the perfect solution for VR-curious gamers with only a budget CPU setup. Unlike Valve's computer-based VR options, the Quest 2 works right out of the box with the majority of VR killer apps, including Beat Saber and Amongst Us VR. The included controllers are surprisingly ergonomic, and the majority of games have Quest options to seamlessly work with their design. The Quest 2 also boasts onboard memory to store games and applications, which makes it an ideal option for VR gamers on the go. The Meta Quest 2 is available from a variety of online retailers starting at $400. The base model comes with just 128 gigabytes of storage capacity, but a 256 gig version is also on sale for $500. Several bundle kits that include accessories like carrying cases and extra cables are available, which make it all much easier to travel with. So that might be up there with the PlayStation VR in terms of it'll beat it on kind of price for the entry level one. It has 128 gigs of storage. I don't know how big the games are in VR, but a lot of them are smaller because you don't play them for that long. But if it's bigger games, they take up a lot. Like when it comes to the PlayStation, one game could be over 100 gigs. I have a couple of games that are over 100 gigs. And if you go with all the add-ons and everything, it could take up the whole memory. I could get one game that would take up the whole memory of that. But it's a different setup with this, so the games would be smaller, and maybe there could be a lot of cloud gaming and things like that. So I haven't used the Meta Quest 2, but it has got good reviews and things like that. But so this is all, it works internally. So if you don't have a console, for people that are interested in a VR headset and don't have a computer or don't have a console or have an older console or something like that, or a not brand new computer or something that mightn't have all the capabilities, this might be a good option if you wanted to get into VR. It's rechargeable, it's wireless and things like that. So that's a pretty good option as well. And it's not as expensive. If you want the 256 gig, well, it could be 550 or 600 for the PlayStation one. So even for the 256 gig one, it's still cheaper than the PlayStation one. So that's definitely another option. If you're already an experienced VR enthusiast and you want the absolute best experience, they say the Pimax Vision 8K X is king. Look for the Pimax. The Shanghai-based VR tech company produces the absolute peak of VR headsets for gamers who want more than the standard fare can provide. Its latest high-end product, the Pimax Vision 8K X, which blows the above two options out of the water when it comes to features and visual fidelity. It's €1,400. So the Vision 8KX lives up to its name with a 3840 by 2160 screen for each eye, giving it the absolute best resolution of all VR headsets on the market in 2023. The real selling point is its field of view, which registers at 200 degrees diagonally, full peripheral vision, combined with the absolute best screens, produces the most immersive experience possible in VR. However, the Pimax is meant to be used with existing VR platforms like the Index for tracking. The company does produce its own controllers, but if you have a pair of Index Knuckles already, they're perfectly compatible with the Pimax. The Pimax Vision 8KX is available on Amazon for $1,400, making it the most expensive option on this list by far. However, it's hard to argue with the insane specs for the unit. For gamers with deep pockets, the Pimax Vision 8KX is the ultimate experience. So I suppose, overall, I suppose if they have the PS5, that might be an option. If they want something that's a bit more budget-friendly and kind of an all-rounder as well, the other one, like the expensive ones, or the Meta Quest 2 might be another option as well. So I think it might be between those two. There are other ones on the market as well, and it all depends on your budget and if you want the ultimate one or if you want a more budget-orientated one. I suppose if your son is big into the PlayStation and plays all the PlayStation games and would prefer the headset to go with the PlayStation, it would be an extra £50 from that one, from the Meta Quest 2, so it might be more suitable. But if he wasn't absolutely, you know, just more into VR on its own, it might be. And see, also some games in favor of the PlayStation, some games might already be on his console that could be like Gran Turismo 7. I'd have that already. So if I did get the PlayStation headset, the new VR headset, it would be, I'd have a game straight away that I can play on it because it's going to have VR in it. Whereas if I bought the Meta Quest 2, I couldn't play that game on it. I'd have to go and buy a game that's similar, or they wouldn't have Gran Turismo because that's a Sony only. That's a PlayStation only game. So that wouldn't be available on it, but there would be other driving games, I'm sure, and things like that. So that's another thing to think about. So yeah, that'd be the different options. I hope I've given you a thorough run through there of all the different options for the headset, and the best of luck with your son's birthday and everything like that, and I hope he gets the one he's looking for. So let's have a look at some of the latest news in tech while we're more than halfway through the show. Apple's micro LED dream, what it means for the Apple Watch and beyond. So the new technology that seems to be kind of taking over from OLED as the sharpest, best quality screens seems to be micro LEDs. So they're harder screens to make because there are more LEDs in the same square inch. As that's what makes it even sharper. I suppose the next thing will be micro OLEDs. So micro LEDs that turn on and off. Maybe they are already OLED style LEDs, but that would be even better again. But Apple are working on the technology now as well. The Apple Watch already has a beautiful display, so micro LEDs benefits aren't obvious, but it's an inevitable next step for the screens in our mobile devices. Apple is reportedly planning to build micro LED displays into future Apple Watch models, either in 2024 or 2025, according to a January 10th report from Bloomberg. The move would continue Apple's progression towards using the company's own parts across its products without having to rely on components from outside suppliers. Another report from Mark Gorham says this week that Apple is currently working on an all-in-one chip that handles Wi-Fi, Bluetooth, and cellular networking. The company's in-house silicon already powers the iPhone, iPad, Mac, Apple Watch, and Apple TV. With all these efforts, the end goal for Apple is to have greater control over future products with less risk of delays and setbacks that are out of the company's control. With screens in particular, such a shift could impact the financial outlook for suppliers like Samsung Display and LG Display, which provide the bulk of Apple's current panels. But as it stands today, whether you're buying an Apple Watch Series 8, Ultra or SE, you're already getting a smartwatch with a bright, vivid display. So it's worth examining what benefits, if any, this next generation micro LED technology would bring to Apple's wearables. Often hailed as the next major leap for display technology after OLED, micro LED screens provide many of the same benefits. The picture is generated by millions of individual light-emitting diodes that offer per-pixel dimming. Oh, so it does the same as OLED. Each one can shut off to produce perfect blacks. This results in the unrivaled contrast that we've been enjoying from OLED TVs and smartphones for years. More recently, OLED is increasingly used in tablets, laptops, and desktop monitors. And phones and everything like that. So, but the O in OLED stands for organic, and it turns out that's actually one of the downsides. The organic compound in OLED displays has a limited lifespan and still comes with at least one chance of permanent burn-in. But even if it's barely a factor on modern high-end TVs, overall brightness has also fallen short of the best LCD TVs that use mini LED backlighting and local dimming to try to get within striking distance of OLED's superb contrast and higher sustained brightness. Samsung Display and LG Display have both made significant headway with brighter OLED panels over the last couple of years. QD OLED in Samsung's case, but micro LED promises even greater brightness without the burn-in or panel degradation issues. Samsung has shown micro LED displays that reach up to 4000 nits of peak brightness, which is roughly double that of the best OLED and LCD TVs are capable right now. That's a level of pop that would hold up in any environment, like the iPhone 14 Pro and Pro Max. Apple Watch Ultra tops out at 2,000 nits of bright outdoor environments. I know, like, my last phone had 1,000 or 1,200 nits of brightness, and that was very high, so I found it very bright. So these will be very bright altogether. That's still plenty bright and perfectly visible in sunny conditions, but micro LED could up the game even further. There's one company that has so far led the way with micro LED, and it's Samsung. The company provided an update on where things stand at CES 2023. If you're a display nerd or a general tech enthusiast, there's a video worth watching. It's CES 2023 micro LED, the one and only Samsung. So there's a video about that on YouTube if you want to see it. In the voiceover, you'll hear the key line, micro LEDs have limitless scalability. As they are resolution free, bezel free, ratio free, and even size free. That means the screen can be freely resized in any form for whatever you use it for. Just like building blocks, micro LEDs are placed into modules that can be seamlessly combined with any shape or size. In addition to being self-emissive, micro LEDs are individually produced. So technically, you could have like a TV that you can just buy more blocks, buy an extra row and make it bigger. Just kind of they clip together and you can increase the size of your TV. Is that what they're saying? Or is just they can just build different size TVs, different size panels and all that? Micro LEDs are placed into modules that can be seamlessly combined in any shape or size, in addition to being self-emissive. Micro LEDs also have individually produced red, green and blue color, without needing the same backlighting or color filters as conventional displays. So that's why they can be used individually. So the displays can output perfect color and improve color brightness. As with QD OLED, that superior color luminosity makes the whole screen come off brighter to your eyes. Since micro LED tech is still so fresh, it's outrageously expensive for early adopters. Want to install Samsung's The Wall in your house, you're looking at $800,000. So it's critical for those displays to spread and reach more products for cost to come down. So hopefully it will. So that's in a look at micro LED, and that's what Apple will be thinking about using in the future as well. Russia plans to launch a new Soyuz spacecraft to replace a leaky one docked at the ISS. Leaks in the spacecraft were discovered late last year. NASA and Russia's Roscosmos are sending the replacement craft sometime next month. though it's not considered a rescue mission. A SpaceX spacecraft is standing by as a backup. So their Soyuz that's linked at the space station is leaking and they need to get a replacement one out. A Russian Soyuz spacecraft docked to the International Space Station began leaking coolant early last month, leading to concerns about whether the vehicle would be safe to transport ISS crew members back to Earth. NASA and Russian space agency Roscosmos have now announced they will be sending a replacement spacecraft for NASA astronaut Frank Rubio and Roscosmos cosmonauts Sergei Prokofiev and Dmitry Petelin in which to travel home. A SpaceX Crew Dragon is also available as contingency option should it be required. Roscosmos will send a replacement Soyuz called MS-23 to the ISS launching on February the 20th, so it can be used to return the astronauts to Earth. The mission has been scheduled to launch in March, carrying new crew members, but it will now launch earlier with no crew. NASA is referring to the Soyuz as a replacement vehicle, not a rescue. Right now, the crew is safe aboard the space station, said Joel Montalbano, International Space Station Program Manager. So yeah, that's coming up, and they'll have the SpaceX. They've already sent people there and back, so they've been proven to work okay as well. So hopefully everything will be safe, and the three astronauts will be the astronaut and the two cosmonauts will be returned safe to Earth again. So everyone deserves a Pincel, cheap, light, and open source. The Pincel is a no-brainer for most tinkerers. So this is like an advanced tech pencil. It has, I can see, like, is it like a USB in the top of it, and it has a little screen, and it looks more like a screwdriver with a pointy end. Learning to solder, oh, so it's a soldering iron, but it's a kind of an advanced looking one. It was a life-changing experience for me, but it can seem daunting. You aren't just screwing and unscrewing parts. You are melting hot metal with a scorching tip. While it seems like something out of reach for most people, I'm here to assure you that it's never been easier to do. And it's in part thanks to the Pincel. The Pincel by Pine64, makers of single-board computers and affordable Linux laptops, is an efficient, nimble soldering iron that runs an open-source firmware called Iron OS by Raylim. It has a bright little OLED screen, easy-to-understand controls, a 32-bit RISC-V SoC, and can be powered by either a DC adapter or USB-C charger. And you can even run it on a battery bank, as I definitely have done that multiple times. And to top it all off, the Pincel costs roughly $25 plus shipping, which takes it out to about 40 quid, plus whatever other goodies you want to order. The Iron OS also runs on several similar inexpensive soldering irons, like these popular ones from Miniware. I've seen a few of these actually recently, these kind of wireless soldering irons and rechargeable soldering irons, and they're becoming more popular now. It's not just a big heavy kind of a unit with the soldering iron on top of it in the spring, and you have your roll of solder and all that stuff. They're getting lighter and for doing different jobs at home and things like that. So people are getting into their soldering, so for changing different circuits and things around. So that's a new one on the market. ChatGPT will be everywhere in 2023. The chatbot is paving the way for search results far beyond anything we've come to expect, and so much more. Chatbots aren't new. They've existed in some form since as far back as the 1960s, but there is something special about ChatGPT. The conversational chatbot that's captivated investors, tech giants, and the public since its launch last November. The internet already abounds with ideas of how to put ChatGPT's human-like dialogue to use, from creating custom chatbots to help light traffic tickets to creating workouts and diet plans. The bigger question, however, is ChatGPT, or most accurately, the tech that powers it, will it have the same sweeping influence as other breakthrough technologies of our generation, like the iPhone, Google Search, and Amazon Alexa? So for anyone that doesn't know what it is, it's a software powered by AI, where you can go in and ask it questions, and it'll answer the questions for you. I was asking different questions. I trying it out and kind of like, what are the typical fish species of Ireland or something like that? And it'll give a list of all the different ones and it'll say where they are and, you know, how many are there. And it'll give a whole article about it kind of for you. It'll kind of pre-create an article for you. I know a lot of students and things are using it for their different exams and things like that, where they have to write something and they're just getting ChatGPT to do it for them, and then they're just changing around a bit. So I've heard that's happening. So it's definitely becoming very popular, and it is quite smart. It does make mistakes, though. I was asking it, some question that I would have a fair idea of the answer to already, and it made some mistakes. It said some things that weren't exactly right, so I wouldn't be exactly trusting it to do my leaving cert for me, like. but it is quite good, though, and it is handy actually to answer some questions, things like that. But they're talking about, where is it going to go with ChatGPT? It's a free chatbot made by OpenAI. So what's the best way to answer a tell me about yourself question in a job interview? But ChatGPT can also do things like write poems, songs and essays. Oh yeah, I've seen some people getting it to write poems and things like that, and write haikus, and it can do lots of other things. That's cool. It's a bit of fun if you want to check it out. It's free to use and all that on OpenAI. So that's pretty cool. These 48 megapixel camera equipped AR glasses zoom in with your voice. DigiLens industrial targeted Argo AR glasses are also the clearest looking lenses I've seen and tried. So this looks like a joke kind of pair of glasses, but obviously it has a professional use. But it's like a normal kind of glasses at the bottom, and in the middle part between your eyes has a, I'm not sure if it's a camera. Oh, it is a camera and two little sensors. And in the top part, so the part that goes on your ears and around along the rim at the top is really thick black. Both sides, the parts facing forward in front of your ears have both cameras on them. And so they are quite thick, but you'd know what they are. I took a selfie of myself wearing the DigiLens Argo AR glasses in a hotel room at CES in Las Vegas. And of course, I looked ridiculous. Unlike many devices that aim to make future AR glasses more normal looking, this pair is focused on being safe and reliable. It's designed for places like factories, industrial environments, and other workplaces. It doesn't matter what I look like from the outside. From the inside, everything was crystal clear. The DigiLens team manufactures waveguide lenses for AR headsets, which use them to help display the projected virtual objects that seem to float over the real world. The company is now making its own glasses for release this year. The Argo is both a showpiece for DigiLens' new lenses, and which the company boasts are the best in the business, and a model for making better, safer workplace headsets. DigiLens team helped to create other ambitious AR glasses in the past, including the ODG, which I tried years ago, and the Daiquiri, which aimed to be a workplace competitor to Microsoft HoloLens. So that's why multiple companies will compete to make AR glasses happen over the next few years, while chipmaker Qualcomm is promising a wave of smaller hardware between 2023 and 2025. So there's lots of different ones on the market. Or you can get prescription inserts as well, which look weird, but my vision wasn't obstructed at all. I felt like wearing regular glasses. So you can get prescription inserts for them as well. They're pretty cool. The main thing with these is that the glass is quite transparent, so you don't get obstructed like some of the other ones, so that's quite good. The AR works well. Google's Verily to cut 15% of workforce. About 200 jobs will be eliminated as part of the layoffs. Verily, the life sciences arm of Google's parent Alphabet, plans to eliminate 15% of its workforce, or about 200 jobs. The cuts, which include some programs that are aimed at making the unit more efficient, according to a company blog post on Wednesday. It doesn't say where these jobs are. Some of the programs being cut include Verily Value Suite, a health system analytics tool, as well as some early stage programs focused on remote patient monitoring for heart failure and micro needles for drug delivery. Other cuts come to Intrinsic, which is Alphabet's industrial robotics effort. They're cutting 40 positions, or about 70% of their workforce, according to a report on Wednesday. Alphabet didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. These layoffs at Google reflect the turbulence facing the tech industry, with Twitter, Microsoft, Meta and Amazon also letting thousands of workers go in recent months. So that's more jobs, unfortunately, going. The woman who is in charge of picking the words for Wordle has revealed which words have received the most complaints. New York Times puzzle editor Tracy Bennett from Michigan in the US says pairer and rupee, as well as condo, were amongst the words that received most complaints. She told the Today Show on NBC that obscure or regional words also caused frustration for players of the daily word game. So that's some of the words that got her some complaints. And that's about it for today. I hope you've enjoyed Tech Thursday. As always, you can call 069-66200 or you can text or WhatsApp 087-166-9800. And any tech-related questions you might have, I will answer them on the next show. You can also email patrick102fm@gmail.com. So that's been Tech Thursday for today. Hope you've enjoyed that. I'll be back again next week with you. Thanks for listening. Cheers.
You're listening to Tech Thursday on West Limerick 102 FM.